courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Coming up on Heard on the Street, President Trump's tax cuts may be smaller and later than you think, and how Apple is getting users to pay more without raising prices.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. Reporting from New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried, joined by my colleague Alex Frangos. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Miriam.
So in our second segment, we'll talk about the real reason behind Apple's newly edited product lineup. But first, we have Heard on the Street's Justin Lehart here to talk to us about taxes. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
So, Justin, they say nothing is certain but death and taxes. Tax cuts, however, may not be so inevitable. You argued in a piece this week that the tax cuts promised by President Trump may not happen as quickly as the market is expecting. Why the delay?
Well, a lot of it has to do with this health care legislation, which right now, we should say, this is Thursday. It's being voted on in the House. We don't know if it's going to be voted on today. We don't know if it's going to pass. And, you know, we don't know how long this whole process with health care is going to take.
Why does that matter for taxes?
Yeah, because you can only do one thing at a time. And, you know, first the House is going to have to come up with some sort of health care legislation. Then it has to go to the Senate. And the Senate is not going to like the House version. So they're going to come up with their own version. And then they're going to have to get together and agree on a version, and then they're going to have to get it to get it at the president's desk. They also have a lot of other things they have to do. They have to confirm a Supreme Court justice. There's also a lot of distractions going on politically.
Well, I think it helps to remember, Justin, right, that Obamacare took, 9 months from when it was first talked about in Congress to actually being signed? And that was when Democrats really controlled both houses and the White House. And in this case, while the Republicans control all that levers here, that's much, much smaller majorities.
It is. But they are trying to do it very quickly. And I think some of this urgency about doing it quickly is they really, really want to get to tax reform. I mean, this is what I think this is probably what a lot of them really care about. They don't care as much about the health care stuff as they care about getting those taxes cut.
They want to be able to say that they repealed and replaced Obamacare, but the details of it are maybe less important to some of them. Is that what you're saying?
Or? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They campaign on it, but, you know, what they really are sort of jazzed about is tax reform.
And so are markets, obviously, really jazzed about tax cuts. So let's say tax cuts don't happen this year. Let's say they happen next year. Well, can't investors just kind of be in a holding pattern for a while and maybe the S&P stops going up? But, you know, they're coming, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, remember that, you know, when we buy stocks, we buy them based on future cash flow. So if I push back your tax cut, your future cash flows, they're lower. The other thing you have to think about is sort of the longer healthcare sort of grinds through, the less time you have to do tax reform. So some of the things that they're talking about with tax reform, they may have to put by the wayside. So I think border adjustment tax, this idea of taxing imports, that is going to be a real tough thing to get past. Right?
And that's sort of a linchpin right now, at least, of the House's tax cut plan.
Yeah, because it helps pay for the corporate tax cut. So they want to cut corporate taxes, the corporate tax rate, from 35% down to 20%. Right? And part of what pays for that is this tax on imports. Retailers hate this. A lot of people hate this. Some people love it. But a lot of people hate it. And it's going to be really, really tough to get that through. So you take that away, and then maybe it's going to be a little bit harder to bring the corporate tax rate down as much as you want. So, you know, yeah, maybe you cut it, but not as much, so you don't get as much of an earnings boost. And, you know, companies will like that. Investors who are hoping for more, maybe not so much.
Justin, is that what we've been seeing this week and why stocks have been a bit jittery? We've had like the biggest decline since the election in the Dow. And, you know, is it sort of people taking stock and realizing, oh, this thing that was the main driver of my vision for higher corporate profits may not happen this year?
I think that's probably, that has to be an element of it. There's so much going on now, right? There's all these, you know, there's sort of the Russian distractions going on and questions swirling about that. People can't be so excited about that. And also, stocks are expensive, right? They're not cheap anymore. So it makes it a lot easier for stocks to sell off on bad news when they're pricey.
But they're not, they wouldn't be as expensive if they're probably, right. If they weren't going to have to pay these taxes.
Yeah, it's all predicated. Yeah, it's all predicated on this. Yeah. You're right. They don't look as expensive if you sort of assume away a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
But Justin, I have a question about, you know, just how, you know, cause and effect a tax cut is with the market going up. Because I remember the George W. Bush administration, there were two big tax cuts in 2001 and 2003. And the first one, the market just kept on going down. I guess it was after you had 9/11 and there was a recession. But the 2003 tax cut, the market had already bottomed. I guess it went up, but, you know, it didn't last for that long. I mean, aren't there other bigger things like corporate profits and the state of the economy that investors should be keeping their eye on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of those things matter, too. And also, you know, consider if you have tax reform that, you know, boosts the economy in a lot of ways. Well, look, we've got a pretty tight labor market in the U.S. already. So isn't the Federal Reserve going to be leaning the other way if you start boosting it now? It is kind of a weird time to be stimulating the economy, right? A good time to do this kind of stuff, you know, might have been like in 2012. But like right now to be, you know, doing this kind of thing, it may be a little more counterproductive. Like you would kind of want to have more countercyclical fiscal policy than what we have.
I mean, doesn't history show us just when it comes to tax cuts and tax reform that, you know, everybody kind of wants, even on both sides of the aisle, everybody wants some amount of tax reform, but it's so difficult to come to any agreement. So, I mean, I'm sort of surprised that investors this time really believed that it would happen.
Yeah, I mean, everything is lined up. I mean, you do have, right, the Republicans control the House, the Senate, the presidency. They are really, really gung-ho about this. So, yeah, you have to think that, you know, something, there's a chance of something happening. Just, you know, the chances of everything happening, it's pretty hard. Especially, you know, the further this stuff gets pushed back, you know, if you're talking about tax reform, you know, still in March of next year with the election, with the midterm election looming, then it gets really, really difficult. And at that point, you know, you have to lower your odds on it a lot.
Just because members of Congress are out there campaigning as opposed to working on redrafts of the new bills.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of put your neck out there on this type of thing right before an election. Right.
But Justin, what are the easy things that they could do? I mean, if they're not going to do border adjustment tax, you know, things like foreign profit repatriation or just a corporate tax cut, you know, just, you know, let's give them something. Let's give our voters some red meat.
Probably the easy thing is probably a corporate tax cut and don't worry so much about the deficit. Right. Because that's, you know, that's sort of the typical thing. Right. When you're out of power, you worry about the deficit. And when you're in power, you don't worry about it so much.
We are going to have to take a break. Coming up, why Apple's new product lineup could encourage customers to pay more.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Paul Vigna. If you do not subscribe to the Money Bee podcast, you are going to feel worse than a short seller on the day of a big rally. Go to iTunes and WSJ.com/podcasts. You want to sign up for this one.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome back to Heard on the Street, the podcast. I'm Miriam Gottfried here with Alex Frangos and Dan Gallagher, who joins us from San Francisco. Hi, Dan.
How's it going?
All right. So, Dan, you wrote about some edits that Apple made to its product lineup this week. Can you tell us what happened?
What they did is it was mostly on the iPad line. They got rid of one of the iPad mini models, so now they're only marketing one, which I think is the iPad mini 4. They sort of, the main, your kind of flagship 9.7-inch iPad now just has one model as well, and it used to be called iPad Air, and they seem to have dropped that name. And they also lowered the prices on them. And one interesting thing, especially on the Mini, is that they killed the lower memory module. So now the only one you can buy in that lineup is 128 gigabytes of memory. And when I kind of put all the things together, because Apple actually does this, they tend to lop off products at, you know, after a couple of years. They're pretty brutal about managing their lineup. But it looked to me, too, that another part of what they were going is, you know, kind of trying to angle more customers to these higher memory formats.
And what would be the advantage of that for Apple? I mean, it seems like they're not really raising prices on these devices. So how can they basically afford to sell more memory for the same price?
Well, you know, it's an interesting move, especially now because memory prices have been going up. But, you know, with Apple, since they're not getting a lot of growth out of a lot of their device lineups, I mean, even iPhone, the thing they're trying to push for growth is their services business. And this is services is a catch-all term that encompasses iTunes, the App Store, software they sell, even software they're selling for businesses through partnerships with IBM is all falling under services. And that's been the one area that's growing for them. Now, the rub is that if you're going to do that, you need more capacity on the devices. And for anybody like myself who has, like, the lowest, my iPhone is the lowest memory that was available, and you run up really quick about the number of, you know, the songs you could put on there or shows or books or even apps. And so essentially more memory means people can buy more.
But the thing I don't understand is I thought everything's going to the cloud. So why do I need more memory? If I'm an Apple investor, I'm sort of worried about this. I'm looking at this and saying, you're not selling as many products. You're making your products more expensive, but not being able to charge for them. And you're hoping to get it back through these other services, which are all well and good. But do they really need more memory? I mean, if Apple says they have more than 20 million, you know, Apple Music subscribers. Well, if you're streaming, what do you need memory for? If you're putting your photos on the cloud, what do you need the memory for?
You still need memory because the content always goes on the device first. And so people who have, you know, I keep running up into memory constraints all the time, and I save pretty much everything on the cloud. But a lot of people still keep music loaded on their devices. And apps in particular, and apps get bigger. Every app update adds memory to the app. So if you're just using things like Facebook and Instagram, you can start filling up your phone's storage RAM by quite a bit. So even the cloud setup doesn't always solve that problem. And the interesting thing is that when I did a little math on, you know, looking at Apple's unit sales, if you add in iPhone, iPad, Mac, you know, their device units they report, they're actually selling, their service revenue keeps going up, even though the unit sales have not been.
And that's higher margin revenue, right?
I'm sorry?
It's higher margin revenue, so that's good. That's a good thing for them.
Yeah, I mean, services, like, you know, the estimates are about, you know, sometimes 60-70% gross margins, kind of depends on, you know, there's a lot of stuff in those services, so the margin's different for each one, but it tends to be higher service. And you know, the trend line I've seen over the last 3 or 4 years when they've been reporting these the services and the way they have been is that it does keep going up. They are successfully doing more revenue even though the device sales aren't quite what they were.
But Dan, when I think of services for, you know, I think primarily for music, and I know there's other things as well, you know, other entertainment things like movies and things like that. And I feel like Apple is kind of not in the lead there. I mean, Spotify has twice as many subscribers. You know, when you look on the video, you know, thing, Apple TV is, like, you know, somewhat successful, but, you know, the real business seems to have gone to folks like Netflix and others. So is Apple really succeeding over there? I mean, I think, you know, like, how is the subscription music business done?
Well, I think the subscription, they're behind Spotify, but they've added to it very fast. I mean, they got to milestones even faster than Spotify did. So they're the strongest number two in it. I think music streaming on its own isn't what they're seeing as their major source of profits and services. In fact, generally, content sales overall hadn't been going as strong based on the estimates. But when you're adding in, you're also talking about software, subscription-based services, App Store, those tend to be better, more performing and higher margin stuff for them.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't Apple make money anytime I download, or anytime I pay for an app over, through Apple, through the App Store?
Oh, yeah, they make...
So, I mean, it doesn't need to be an app that Apple owns for them to get a cut.
No, they get a cut over everything you buy on the App Store.
So that probably adds up a lot more than, just their music service, for example.
Yeah, I mean, and the music is, even when they started music for years, they were kind of clear, but they weren't making a lot of profit on it. They were trying to get, fill their, have something to help market their devices. I think it evolved into a profitable business for them, but I think just simply on content sales, that's not the major source of profits within services.
I mean, it seems like even, as we move toward higher definition video, toward 4K, that will only mean that things take up more and more memory on our devices. Would you say that's true? I mean, we're moving in the direction of higher quality all the time.
Yeah, and like I said, just the apps alone that people keep on their devices, those alone keep getting bigger. So if you're using apps and subscribing to services through those apps, you end up needing more memory. So I think this is kind of why I think this fed what they've done with the devices, and they bring up the memory over the course of years. I remember when iPhones kind of started with, I think 8 gigs a bit was the lowest, and now the lowest you can buy is 16. So it's kind of a normal trend. And it just kind of stuck out in this particular product update they did.
So if I'm an investor, though, what I really want to do is be owning these memory chip companies. So who makes the kind of chips that go into iPads and iPhones and things that are going to benefit from this ramp up?
Well, the RAM makers are companies like Samsung, Micron, SanDisk, and those sorts. The interesting thing there is that's a very volatile business, as I've written in some other columns. So right now, memory prices are really strong because, that's one where when production and where supply and demand are lining up well, the prices are strong, but sometimes the prices crash and those stocks crash too. So I would argue those are much more volatile investments if you're investing in pure memory makers than Apple has been even.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on why more memory means more money for Apple.
Want to retire rich? Check out the Watching Your Wealth podcast for everything you need to know about building your wealth and protecting your money. Only on WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
So, Dan, can Apple just keep adding memory and expect service revenues to make up for the additional cost? Or is there a point at which the economics stop making sense?
It's hard to say. And adding memory is actually a pretty profitable thing for them, because if you look at I did some work on this a few years ago. If you take a device, double a device's memory from 64 to 128, Apple usually upsells that for about $100, and there's no other differences in the device itself. It's simply selling, 60 something gigs of memory for $100, which is actually very, very profitable for them, because that's nowhere near what the street price is for that kind of memory. So even though memory prices are strong right now, so they don't get quite the margin uplift that they might otherwise on the bigger modules, it's still a pretty profitable upgrade for them, just to sell those higher memory things. And, I guess we'll have to see over time, as we get, because I think it's kind of unprecedented to have limited lineups in the lower in the lower memory tiers the way we're seeing right now. So it'll be interesting to see if they get a big boost in the services line. But what I've seen in the last probably 4 or 5 quarters is that they've actually grown services pretty well, even though the unit shipments across their lines haven't.
That makes sense. I'm intrigued to see what the next quarter brings for the services line. A new thing to look at in Apple's earnings. We are going to have to end it there. That wraps things up for this week's Heard on the Street podcast. Please join us every week for the latest in global investing. For more, please check us out at wsj.com/heard. That's wsj.com/heard. You can also email us with your comments, suggestions, or questions at heardpodcast@wsj.com. From New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried. On behalf of the rest of the Heard on the Street team, thanks for listening.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.